Well, thank you all for coming. Firstly, we'd just like to acknowledge that this conference is occurring on the land of the Wurundjeri people, and we bestow our respects on their elders both past and present. We acknowledge this land was never ceded, and it always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Thank you for coming to Marxism 2011. You are in the session on the Arab revolutions and their significance. We have a fantastic lineup of speakers this afternoon. We have Hassan, who is a student activist from Bahrain. Walid, who is from Egypt, studying here in Australia temporarily before he heads back to Egypt to join in the ongoing process of the revolution. And we have Sandra Bloodworth from the Social Alternative National Executive. We're going to get straight into it, and Hassan is going to speak first about the situation in the Middle East. Thank you.
السلام عليكم جميعا. بداية نشكركم على إعطائنا الفرصة للحديث عما يجري بالبحرين، وهذا جزء بسيط جدا نحاول أن ننقله لكم.
In the name of God, most merciful. In the start, we'd like to thank you all for giving us this opportunity to speak to you and give you an idea. And what I'm going to talk about is just a glimpse, a short glimpse of what's happening over there.
We need to turn off.
شعب البحرين خرج في ثورة كما خرج شعب تونس ومصر وليبيا واليمن وسوريا. خرج يطالب بالحرية والكرامة. ثورة البحرين ليست ثورة طائفية وليست ثورة من أجل لقمة العيش.
The people of Bahrain have come out in a popular revolution. Our revolution in Bahrain is exactly like the revolutions of the peoples of Syria, Egypt, Tunisia, and Libya. Our revolution is not secular, and our revolution is not only for improving our living standard.
شعب البحرين فقد الثقة والأمان في وطنه، ونحن نعلم أن الأمان بالنسبة للإنسان كالهواء الذي يتنفسه.
What happened in Bahrain is that the people are losing completely their feeling of security. And all of us know that the feeling of safety and security is the most important feeling, just like the air that you breathe.
خرج شعب البحرين في 14 فبراير 2011 بتظاهرات وتجمعات سلمية يرفع أعلام الدولة بيد وباقة الورد في يد أخرى ويقدمها لرجال الشرطة التي كانت ترد على هذه بالقمع بكل وحشية وشراسة.
The people of Bahrain took to the streets in the 14th of February. We started in peaceful demonstrations and peaceful gatherings. Every one of us was carrying the flower in one hand and the flag of our Bahrain country in the other. But in return, the police, Bahraini police and Bahraini security forces were actually returning back whatever we put up for them, which is the flower and the peace, by trying to crush us in a very, very severe way.
وبعد عجز النظام البحريني المندهش والمتفاجئ من حجم هذه الاحتجاجات ومن إصرار الشباب على الاستمرار في هذه الاحتجاجات وبالطريقة السلمية حاول النظام أن يتلاعب أو أن يتحايل على مطالب الناس ويطرح مبادرة للحوار أثنت عليها المعارضة وأثنت عليها دول العالم للسعي في هذه المبادرة.
The Bahraini regime in the start felt at loss. They felt that they couldn't quell this Bahraini popular uprising. So what they've done is some kind of a deception maneuver, which is the regime offered to go into negotiations, into some kind of a dialogue with the Bahraini people who are protesting. And this step was actually praised by the international and forces and the Bahraini opposition.
وكما تعلمون جيدا بأن كل نظام اليوم في العالم لكي يخرج من مأزق أو من مشكلة في البلد لكي يحافظ على وجوده يحاول أن يتحايل على الرأي العام وعلى الشعوب العالم ولهذا طرحت مبادرة الحوار لإعطاء النظام فرصة لإعادة تنظيمه وإعطاء النظام فرصة للتآمر على الشعب البحريني.
We all know that every regime, when they feel themselves in a conflict or a crisis in some sort, they try to do some manipulation in order to gain time and get themselves the opportunity to actually quell this revolution.
ولكن هذا التآمر وهذه الفرصة لم تكن كسابقتها في الدول الأخرى حيث أن في البحرين بدل أن كما حصل في مصر أقال الحكومة ليعطي فرصة للآخرين لكي يستطيع أن يتحايل على الآخرين ولكن في البحرين اختلفت الأمور فكانت التآمر من أجل دخول جيش بما يسمى درع الجزيرة وهو نعتبره جيش احتلال في البحرين.
The conspiracy that our Bahraini regime did was completely different. Although it's a conspiracy to gain time, it's completely different from, for instance, what the Egyptian regime has done. It's not that he sacked the government first, then tried to manipulate others and get them into the government with him. It's actually that his conspiracy was to bring an occupation force, we consider it an occupation force. It's actually called the forces of Al Jazeera Shield or the Peninsula Shield, and that's how Saudi Arabia calls its army, and we consider it an occupation force.
وللأسف الشديد وعندما خسرت الولايات المتحدة الأمريكية النظام التونسي وخسرت أيضا النظام المصري أرادت أن توقف هذا التغيير وهذا الإصلاح الذي يجري في العالم فسمحت إلى القوات السعودية بالدخول إلى البحرين والدليل على الموافقة الأمريكية لدخول هذه القوات داخل البحرين هو الصمت المطبق على الإدارة الأمريكية والإزدواجية في التعامل مع النظام البحريني والأنظمة الأخرى.
So what happened next is that the America has been conspiring with Saudi Arabia and the proof for this conspiracy is the Americans turning a blind eye and complete silence towards what the Saudi forces are doing in Bahrain, whilst at the same time they are showing Bahrain a double standard in their approach.
طبعا هناك أمور كثيرة تحصل في البحرين ولكن هذا جزء بسيط وراح يعرض فيلم وثائقي يعرض جزء من ما يحدث في البحرين. ولكن على بشكل سريع أتحدث عن اعتقال محاميين في البحرين اعتقال أطباء من المستشفى اعتقال طلاب ومدرسين من المدارس يعني وضع البحرين وضع مأساة هناك معتقلين ولكن نعتبرهم مفقودين لأن لحد اليوم لا نعرف عن مصير عن مصيرهم أو عن مكان احتجازهم.
What I'm going to show you and talk about is very small as compared to what's really happening. What's happening is completely catastrophic because there are lots of people killed, lots of people being arrested. Some doctors have been arrested from the hospital. Some teachers and students have been arrested from their schools. The people who are arrested, because we don't know anything about what happened to them, we consider them as lost. We don't know anything about them.
وهنا أريد أن أعطي ملاحظة بأن أي نظام اليوم إن كان في مصر لكي يكسب الرأي العالمي ولكي يكسب التعاطف الأمريكي يحاول أن يخوف الأمريكان أو الرأي الغربي أو الدول الكبرى في المنطقة من أن هؤلاء الثوريين هم من جماعة القاعدة أو من طالبان. النظام اليوم في البحرين أيضا يريد أن يكسب التعاطف والرأي العام الدولي ويخوف العالم ويريد أن يوصل للعالم بأن الثورة في البحرين هي تبع إيران. فدائما الأنظمة تحاول أن تعول على حرف إلى جهات إرهاب يعني تعتبرها إرهابية أو في قائمة سوداء.
And as we all know, every regime in the Arab world has been trying to give a stigma for these revolutionary forces of some sort. And most of the time, in order to gain the American and international approval, they have been blaming it on Al-Qaeda. In case of Al-Bahrain, they have been blaming it on Iran, claiming that because that the people who are protesting are mostly Shia, that actually it is they are followers of Iran, which is not the case.
أيضا نحن نطالب المجتمع الدولي بأن يكون له مواقف واضحة تجاه البحرين. نحن سمعنا تصريح إلى الأمم المتحدة بان كيمون يصرح بأنه يجب أن يكون في البحرين ضبط للنفس. فلا أعلم عن ماذا يتحدث عن ضبط النفس بمقابل جيش محتل للبحرين وشعب يقدم الورود. فهل يطلب من المحتجين ضبط النفس وهم يقتلون بالرصاص؟
Actually, what is happening now, I am calling on all the international community to give us a real clear position towards what's happening in Bahrain. Because I lately heard that Ban Ki-moon of the United Nations have called on the people of Bahrain to self-restraint. What self-restraint are they asking us about? We give them the flowers and they are bombing us. What self-restraint they are talking about? And now we are going to give way for the CD. It is about a video about what's happening in Bahrain.
Hello everyone, my name is Omid and I'm Egyptian and I'm proud to be Egyptian. I'm here today to speak about the Egyptian revolution that I've never imagined to be part of it. I was here in Australia, enjoyed my time with my friends, preparing for my studies and everything. And I went back to Egypt so I can change my visa, and the revolution started, and I was part of it. So, I'm going to speak about the Liberation Square, what happened in the Liberation Square, and how it started and everything. For the past few years, there have been a lot of corruption happening within the government. They were stealing all the money, there was no jobs, there was nothing actually in the government, in the country, for the people. Everything was consumed by the politicians, the big people, the ones with the powers and everything. And a lot of people were upset by that. And we tried to do a lot, many movements, but it ended up very badly. People were kidnapped, people were beaten to death. The police was so corrupted and owned by the government, they were doing nothing to the citizens themselves. So, when I came back, I heard about this revolution. It was happening on Tuesday, on the 25th. And no one thought that this revolution would continue, would be a big thing. Like, alright, it's gonna be a movement for a day or so, and the police will interrupt and take everyone to the prisons, and that's it for them. Yeah. Anyway, so, apparently it continued Tuesday, and then Thursday, and then Friday, which they called it the Angry Friday. So everyone on Facebook, which is so ironic, like, because Gamal Mubarak, the president of Hosni Mubarak, was once having a meeting with some of, like, the big bosses or whatever, and one of the journalists asked him, Do you have any concerns regarding the people who keeps posting things about having a revolution about Facebook? And he laughed at it and he was like, you should get out of here. Like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no way that this could happen. But it actually happened. Like, Facebook was the reason why this happened. The world spreads so fast that everyone caught it, and after the Friday prayer, everyone agreed that we'll go to the Liberation Square, let's have a movement, let's make a difference in our lives, and let's stop this corruption that's happening. So we went, me and my friends, with, like, I've never been in a revolution before. What's a revolution? Yeah, I heard in history, a few decades ago, some people moved, but I've never seen a revolution. So, alright, let's go. Even if the number is
let's do it for fun.
So, we marched. I live in like 10 kilometers away from the Liberation Square. We started the movement, and on our way to there, a lot of people were coming from everywhere. I don't know where this old people coming from, but they were all going. In the same, like, one of the streets called Gongxi Square, which is the leading square to the Liberation Square. So we started moving, we moved for a very long time. I'll show you one of the pictures how the huge number was. And we were standing, we were cheering. We didn't know whether we were supposed to, like, you know, put cars on burn, break glasses, rob banks. Shall we go peacefully? Like, which way should I go? But everyone was saying it's a peaceful revolution, it's a peaceful revolution, let's do a movement, let's deal for one cause, let's get down the regime, we need something new happening, enough with the president that's been for 30 years. I don't know how he did that, but anyway. So yeah, we were moving in peace, and even when one of the citizens tried to do anything wrong, like break into a bank or break a glass or anything, other people were stopping it, like, it's still conscious now, like, we're fighting the government, we're not fighting the banks, we're not fighting the shops, we're fighting the government. So they were stopped, and the spirit was amazing. It was something like I've never seen in my life before. And especially that no one cared about Christianity or Muslims or religion overall. We were all in the streets. One thing about Egypt and maybe the Arab world, Egyptians love flirt, or girls. And they always comment whether a girl is wearing a skirt, wearing her shoulders, you know. So none of this was happening. All the girls were dressed in whatever clothes they were dressing. They were walking next to us in the streets. All levels of society were in the streets, and none looked or said any comments or had any harassment or nothing. We were all brothers and sisters walking in the same street. We're all Egyptians. We're all Arabs. That was really careful. And I was surprised by that. I was really happy by that. This is something I've never seen before. We kept moving into the Liberation Square. We were trying to get there, but we were stopped by the police. And we started firing rubber bullets and smoke grenades. But I was surprised again, because people were prepared. People, like, from what was happening in Tunisia, they were sending us how to avoid those things. So one of the things that I found, people getting McDonald's trays and putting it on the chest or the back of them. People were putting goggles so that the smoke grenades won't affect their eyes. All vinegar and coca, I don't know how it reacts, but yeah, they were putting it on their eyes and drinking it. I'm like, what's happening? So, it was fun. Till the police came. After that, it did not done. They started firing the smoke grenades. I've never seen a smoke grenade in my life as well. So, like, shall I run? Or the other one? Like, which way? We tried to go in there, but they prevented us. Till we put one of the cars on fire, it exploded. We tried to have a movement, but all of a sudden, the martial law was applied. There's a curfew in the streets. Everyone has to be at home by 6 o'clock. If anyone in the streets is seen, he will be arrested and he will be treated. I don't know, treated in which way, but he will be treated differently. So me and my friends, like, That's right. So we went back home. We knew that nothing was happening. The army went in the streets, but nothing major was happening. So on the Friday night, we went back to the Liberation Square again. We were sitting there. People started putting on setting up tents over there. They said, we're not going to move till we make a change, till we make a real change over there. They stayed, they started talking, what's our purposes, what's our points, what do we want to do, what do we want to change, do we want to change the government as a whole, do we want to change the president as well, what's the point, everything. And the president came on the TV and announced that he's going to change the whole government and try to assign a new government and everything like that. But the problem is not in the government, the problem is in you, Muslim world. You have to know. So none of them were convinced what was happening, and they stayed over there. There was another movement that happened that was called the Warak. But it was a different type of revolution. The revolution, it's like advanced revolution. They do it on horses and camels, if you've seen the videos. They went into the Liberation Square. They said they were pro Hosni Mubarak. I don't know. Whatever they say, they were against us. So they went into the Liberation Square. They were having metal bars hitting everyone, but we were able to capture them. We didn't do anything to them. We just gave them to the army. And one of the other boys as well, there was a war. Or we call it the battles. Because the Liberation Square has several entry points, streets, and it's a huge square. So in each street there was a battle happening there. One was called Talaa Haq Battle, one was called the Egyptian Museum Battle. People were throwing rocks, policemen were undercover, but they're firing the weapons over there. Because the police ran on Friday the 28th, they all ran. The police vanished from the country. They opened the prisons, several videos were taken about how they opened the prison. The prisons were jumping the walls and they're getting into buses and sending them to the city. I don't know why, but so they can kill us or whatever. The battles were happening over there, but the people get organized very quickly, and I don't know how they did that, but lines were formed. First line of attack was formed. Those people are throwing rocks. The second line of attack, in case supplying them with rocks. Another group of people breaking the pavements so they can get them the rocks. Women and girls getting them food and water. It was amazing. I've never seen that. And it just happened like this. No one organized anything, but God wanted that to happen, so it happened. And even when we were fighting, we were on one hand and they were on the other end. And they went up on the buildings under construction and they were throwing rocks from the top of the buildings. So plans were taken, the one that you see in PS3, Medal of Honor, and all these strategic games. group of 10 were formed, 6 going up the roof. We captured those people that throwing the rocks from up there. If anyone goes down and he didn't say the password, he's taken and we'll be dealt with him in a different way. So that's how it started. So yeah, we captured 2 of them. The other 2 ran. Another people on Asrul Nil Bridge. It's one of the bridges that's leading to the Liberation Square as well. One of the pro Mubaraks had a machine gun and he was firing bullets on the other side of the bridge on the anti Mubarak. So 4 people went, they pretended that they were Mubarak and they had the signs for yes for Mubarak and everything. And they went into through the people and they kept we have to deal with the anti Mubarak people, we have to do something. And they kept looking for that policeman that was shooting with the machine gun and they kidnapped him. And took him and gave them to the army. That's how the situation is. Yeah, it was fun. Inside the Liberation Square itself, it was beautiful in there. People were so peaceful, people were so helpful to each other, everyone was trying to help by different means. Whether he's a doctor, he can help with switching people or getting medical supplies or anything. Whether citizen like me, I went there, I didn't know how to do anything, so I just brought food to the people down in the Liberation Square, because they set up like 4 or 5 checkpoints till you go to the Liberation Square. And one of the funny things I saw there, and I've never seen it in my life as well, when I was buying food, I was buying some kind of biscuits, and it was like 50 pesos, which is to the dollar. It's nothing actually, not. Anyway, it was cheap. And so I brought a large quantity, and one of the guys stopped me, like, how much did you buy this for? I go to him, you can take one. Like, I'm getting it for the people. And he goes to me, now, I need to know the price, how much did they charge you? Because if you charge you more than 50 piastres, I'm kicking them out from the Liberation Square. but he didn't. He was setting down the right thing. Cigarettes were cheaper in the Liberation Square than outside the Liberation Square. Everything was there. People got food. Don't ask about bathrooms, I don't know how they dealt with it, but everything was there. They set up 2 stages over there, they were telling the people what to do, what's the cause, for what are we cheering, why are we here, they're trying to encourage them to stay, don't go home, whatever happens, already a lot of people died, we're not going to make their lives go waste. Like, they died for a purpose, let's continue that purpose, whatever it is, and which is like the removal of husband work. Religion was never an issue over there. No one talked about Christianity or Islam or any other religion. We were all just citizens standing there. And one of the good things is on a Friday prayer, when we were doing the prayer itself, all the Christians, while we were praying, surrounding us, protecting us from the police or whatever thugs or criminals would try to attack us. Because one of the videos, when we were praying, all the police were hosing us with water and everything. So they made sure like this, something like this didn't happen. And what was on the Sunday prayer on the church, they were scared to go there. And a lot of Muslims went on every church and they formed like a line so they can, from whatever entry point they're going through, they're protecting them till they get in the church. Egypt wasn't like that. Egypt has a lot of conflicts between Muslims and Christians. Not because that they hate each other, but because there's a lot of incidents happened back days, bombing of a church, no one knew who was behind that or anything, but they just, like, they created hatred between us, and they were successful in that. This was eliminated, and this was a huge thing or step within the revolution itself. The revolution wasn't for the parents, because most of the parents in Egypt were with Hosni Mubarak, or not with Hosni Mubarak, but, like, they want peace. They're afraid on the kids, they don't want them to die because they've seen everything that happened, and they've seen the prisoners that they came out and the thugs and everything, and they were so afraid. So they weren't again with Hosni Mubarak, but they need a peaceful life. They need life to get back to where it is. Just enough. I don't want to lose my kid. That's all that they care for. They've got a point, but thank God they used it to stop it. Like, they kept on going and going and going. This is I'll go through some of the pictures. Alright, yeah, this is a guy getting stuck. This is a charging center that was. It's not the people's charging, like, everyone bought a different charger and I don't know where they get the power from, but they sort of assembled themselves somehow, and everyone wants to charge his phone and just go there and sit and charge it. yeah. And we're trying to like put cars, whatever, to protect the Liberation Square from all the entry points. This is me in Arabic, and everyone signed it. Good. between me and you, there's what's
shade?
Yeah, and please go away in a bad way. These were the very good centers that were built over there. You know the things that you put on the camel or the horses so you can ride them, they were able to capture them and put it as a, you know, as this thing, one of the horse lamps. People just sitting, even if they're doing anything, their existence over there proves a point. That's all over. This one goes, says, please leave my fiance. I miss my fiance because she's in another city and that's about to see her. Yeah, the army here, the army had a, I don't know what happened, but they had the orders to march within the Liberation Square so they can squeeze people and people get out. So what the citizens did, out of nowhere as well, between every line that the army had, people sat between them. So whatever the tanks or the soldiers move in, they're sitting, and they will sit, they will not move. If one wants to go to the bathroom, someone will sit there and take his place till he goes and come back. That's how it is. They had a spirit and they had the determination. Like, if I saw a deck coming next to me, I would run. But they didn't do that. But being in the Liberation Square, like, you've got so much power, you've got so much determination, you've got so much spirit that you will do anything for this country. And the thing is, they're not doing it for themselves, they're doing it for their kids, for the whole next generation, because they know it's not going to be fixed within one day or 2 days or 1 month or years. It's going to take a lot of time, but at least it's a start for a change. That's all that they care about. People were dying there, knowing that he might go to this battle and he's not coming back, but he knows that he's doing this for someone else. That's how they were thinking over there. This one was written on one of the tanks. Mubarak, you can choose to go out or go out. These are the checkpoints that the people, I'll show you a small video of it. That's Ramsey Square. You see, the thing is in front of those are people, like, it's not a lot of people. I'm in the back as well. This is my friend, my brother. And still, we've got like 5 kilometers to go to the Liberation Square. The small grenades. This is in Ramses Square. They had wires, everything surrounding the Liberation Square, so whenever the thugs or the prisoners tried to get in, so they made every precaution possible. And this was the Democratic Party building.
Yeah!
Thank you.
Over there, there was the people against the police, they're firing the smoke grenades and everything.
Just want to show you another video. That's what I was talking about, people standing front lines, they have the stones in front of that in case anything happened. That's on the checkpoints, everyone has to get in with his ID in there. He's checked if he's getting any kinds of any weapons. Girls will be checked by girls, and even the holding cover girls, they have like a full of water that check them inside and everything. Asking people politely, has anyone any kind of weapon, he showed us. Police was forbidden from getting in there, and if one was holding that, they were the one who was meeting them. He checks my ID, search me. That was it.
Thank you, Ali. Thanks. And next up is Sandra Bloodworth.
Today, in the city of Homs in Syria, the protesters have declared today the great day of protest. And I think you should spare a thought for them, as they're probably preparing that after prayers they will come out and face the same kind of military might that we've seen the effects of today in some of the graphics. And while you think of them, I want to rewind to the 31st of January when their president, Bashar al-Assad, spoke to the Wall Street Journal. And he assured the West that Syria was a stable state and would remain so. But also, he took up the ignorant, hypocritical, racist lies of the West that say that Arabs have got a different culture, they don't want democracy or human rights, and use them as a justification for denying the human rights of his own people. He referred back to his inaugural address of 2000 when he said, "Western democracy is the outcome of a long history that resulted in customs and traditions which distinguished their culture. We have to have our own democratic experience, which is special to us, which stems from our history, culture and civilization." But I don't think that he actually thought that the democratic experience was going to hit him in the face the way it has a week or so later. And their democratic experience began with the day of rage, when teenagers had been arrested for the simple act of a bit of graffiti where they were spray-painting slogans inspired by Tunisia and Egypt, one of which said, "The people want to overthrow the regime." This happened in Deraa in the south. And then when protesters were killed, the next Friday was the Friday of Persistence. And since then, their struggle has spread from city to city across the country, people coming out week after week facing the possibility of death. We've seen pictures of people hacking away with whatever they could get their hands on to smash down the horrible, monstrous statues of people like Assad's father, ripping them down, just like scenes that we've seen again and again in revolutions across the decades, where people demolish all the statues, the symbols of their hated regimes, because they're always monstrous, with their rulers looking down on you to impress on you what your place in the world is. We've seen people scrabbling up where however they could get to rip down the images of Assad himself. We've seen women and children more recently blocking the whole cities, the whole highway paraphernalia of one of the cities, to demand that the men, all the men of their lives that had been dragged out of their homes for the simple crime are standing up for that democratic experience that Assad said, you know, hypocritically talked about. And now Assad, of course, is offering his version of democracy and the democratic experience and the, in the Arab way, that he said that he'll get rid of the state of emergency, but only peaceful demonstrations will be allowed. And everyone knows this is code for the demonstrations that we agree to. And he's basically declared that he is going to crush the movement. Now, there's nothing specifically Arab about this experience. This is the experience of revolutions again and again against the capitalist class, the people who rule over us. But there is one specific thing of it that I think is a lovely aspect of them that I've already referred to. The way all the days of protest have their names. It's, you know, it's an indication of the things people have been reporting, that people feel so proud of their activity. They know that they're making history and they want to leave a poetry from their revolution that can be remembered through the decades to inspire others. And I wish that I could have found every day, but I've just listed the ones I could remember. And one significant one was on the 11th of February, if people know the significance of the date in Egypt, when it was the Friday of departure and Mubarak departed the next day, and the, more recently the Friday of anger as people kept on protesting because the reforms they want are not being brought about by the army that's in charge. The Friday of resilience, the Friday of martyrs. And so we have a whole poetry and a way of looking at the world that reflects their pride in the fact that they're making history. But these revolutions are of tremendous significance in the Arab world because all the previous revolutions in that region have been against the colonial occupiers or imperialist domination of their region. And now they are actually rising up against their own Arab rulers, many of whom came to, or most of whom, probably all of them, came to power on the backs of fantastic mass revolutionary movements like we're seeing. And, you know, but they actually didn't want the kind of revolution that put the mass of people in power. They wanted to be part of the imperialist system and run their own little patch of capitalism. And we've seen the corruption that has emerged amongst them all as they've been armed and backed up by the powers of the West as a reward for suppressing their own population and denying them human rights and democracy. And, you know, as the West made the region safe and stable for their own interests and for the interests of imperialism. And we have to say, I think, that the fact that they are rising up against their own Arab rulers has actually changed the face of world politics because it echoes through the Western world. And so, like all I think it is worth remembering, this Arab Spring stretches from Morocco all across the north of Africa, to Oman, to Yemen, and today they're saying there's another round of protests in Yemen. There's talk about Saleh, you know, trying to find some way of a deal that will let Saleh exit in a more dignified way than what he wants to. So he looks like he's going to have to go. And again, you know, hundreds of people have been killed there. We see people in Syria and Jordan and even in Iraq where they're under occupation still virtually from the Americans. And this, as people have talked about, has unleashed the absolute potential for creativity and organisational genius that in normal times nobody accepts except a few Marxists. You know, we talk about this all the time, but the actual abilities of the mass of people are usually hidden because we live, you know, as we live under a system that's just geared to making profits for the tiny few that, rather than for human need. The grind of the poverty and the oppression that people live under, the repression stifles these abilities and the brutality crushes their spirit. And now that they're standing up against it, we've seen the potential be able to come to the fore. Across the Arab world, we've seen, you know, the kinds of organising committees that people have talked about in Tahrir Square. It's not just there that it's happened. The, you know, and there they've organised health centres. People have reported all the things last night and today. Reporters in Libya, and it's obvious that the Western reporters that talking, you know, expressing their experiences, are actually quite astounded by the whole process and are inspired by it in spite of themselves. They're reporting that towns that have been liberated by the rebels in Libya are run by revolutionary councils, and they comment about their efficiency and their energy, and they refer to the relaxed air of freedom. They just can't believe, you know, that in the middle of this war going on with Gaddafi, we can have a sense of relaxed freedom. Ben Knight from the ABC gave a report about crossing the border from Egypt into Libya, and obviously, you know, you hadn't been able to cross that border as a media team all the decades of Gaddafi's rule, and when they came across, the bureaucracy that's usually associated with immigration and border control that everyone knows about had just melted away. And there's a couple of the rebels sitting on a couple of chairs, and they said, "Oh, show us your passport. Oh, yes, we'll get a truck to take you wherever you want to go." And they had a similar experience in Egypt, even though Egypt isn't under actual control of rebels. We've seen the way that people throw off all the stereotypes of, you know, and the women, it's not just women throwing off the stereotypes imposed on them by their own societies, but by the West, and even most of the left in the West, who have argued that women who wear Islamic dress, they're just the pawns of men, they can never be involved in politics. Well, they've shown what idiots people are, really, because women, veiled or unveiled, old and young, have all been able to come out and express their politics, that are participating in the debates, speaking to the Western press, making their opinion known, just as Marx has always said would be possible, because dress doesn't determine your politics. And we've seen the unity that again and again the West and the Arab rulers themselves are trying to make out that all these struggles are just, you know, tribal, or they're Shiites against Sunnis, or there's all these divisions in society, or we have to be careful, there'll be a civil war if we don't have all this repression. Actually, again and again, in country after country, we've seen the manifestations of unity with the Copts and the Muslims having prayers together, defending each other in Egypt, in other countries like in Syria. Assad keeps on trying to create divisions, and so he made some significant concessions to the Kurds. There's 2 million Kurds, 350,000 of whom don't have any citizenship. And he granted that citizenship and a whole range of other things to the Kurds, and trying to paint the protesters as just all these Shiite extremists and all the rest of it. And the Kurds organised their communities to come out deliberately to say, "We're not being bought off because you're too late and it's not enough, and we're part of the mass uprising." And they... came out chanting, "One, one, one, we are all one people." Now, I'm sure in Arabic it comes across as much more poetic and rhythmic. None of their slogans, I'm told, translate with the same poetry into English, but it doesn't matter. I love the slogan anyway, because we know the poetry of the actual meaning that's behind it. And we've seen now that in the south, a whole area where Druze and Christians live, they have become part of the mass uprising as well. And, you know, putting a lie to the fact that this is just like some civil war. And this is so exciting for Marxists who have argued that this is possible for so long, and we've felt so isolated for about three decades. And it's why Karl Marx said 150 years ago, and one of the first things that he ever wrote when he started to work out how the world could seriously be changed, that revolution is necessary, not because it's the only way to overthrow our rulers, but because, he said in his words, the class overthrowing it can only in a revolution succeed in ridding itself of all the muck of ages and become fitted to found society anew. And we're experiencing that before our very eyes on our TV sets night after night. But, of course, all the quick successes of Tunisia and Egypt are not flowing through to every other country. And we need to, you know, not give up heart for the revolutions. It's possible that in Bahrain the revolution has taken a crushing. You know, there's been terrible repression there. And of course, we're not seeing any outrage about the denial of human rights in Bahrain as the Saudis occupy the country because Hillary Clinton and all the rest of them, they're so worried about that region, they want some areas that are still stable. The West can't possibly take a principled and consistent attitude to these revolutions. Why you see them, you know, trying to make out they support the rebels in Libya because they want a foothold there and they see an opportunity. Other places they continue to support repression. And so we'll see. The development of the revolutions will be uneven. As one country makes a step forward, others may stumble. But nevertheless, I think the road has been opened up and towards, you know, a resolution to the problems that the people of the Middle East face. And that road may be difficult, but I think we've seen the absolute determination, the heroism, the insistence that people will keep on coming out no matter what they face, that this is the hope, I say, for humanity. And, you know, I want to say a word or two about the significance of the working class struggle that Anand talked about, because we've seen neighbourhood committees, we've seen organising everywhere. When you think about if all of that is brought to the centre of, and it's in the workplaces, it raises the whole question of who is to control the wealth, the means of making wealth, the way society is organised at the most fundamental level, much more than just who sits at the top of a government. And you can see through the demands of the workers themselves, it raises this issue of get rid of our corrupt bosses, reinstate workers that have been unfairly sacked. We want decent conditions. You know, it raises the whole question of social control, of social revolution in a way that goes beyond and deeper than the street protests and bringing down the dictators. In the Shebin El-Kom textile plant north of Cairo, I think as far as I know, there's a 6-week sit-in still going on. I don't think Anand referred to them. They're making all these demands and become an organising centre. So the textile workers from Mahalla have visited. You know, there's all kinds of things that flow through. And they're raising that their company should be renationalised and that the boss is chucked out. All the things that begin to raise the question of social revolution, because the mass of the population will only get their justice if we do have more of a social revolution, because you can't deal with mass poverty, mass unemployment, all the injustices people face by just replacing the people at the top if the structures of the society remain as they are. And so, at the moment we're seeing unity across the mass of the population, but there are more conservative forces, mostly middle class, who want to get back to business now and start making money again. They just want a political revolution, trying to, get people to go back to work, don't have bad relationships with the army, even though they're shooting people in the demonstrations. But we have to say, you know, these debates are necessary. They're not bickering, as one of the bloggers has dismissed them on the internet. They're debates that need to be carried through now. And if the working class can actually shift the centre more to the workplaces and raise the whole question of social revolution, it's not just in their own countries that it becomes so important. That if they actually get to a situation where they can have more say over the actual way society is working, they have more industrial action, they're more able to take the initiative, actually this will flow through to being able to support people in other countries. And you think, you know, that the more that they are in control, the more they can organise aid to places like Syria and Bahrain and to Libya, because I know, as far as I know, aid's been pouring across the border to Libya the whole time. But on the other hand, it's not just sending a bit of aid, that if the workers actually have more and more control, think of the sorts of things they can start to do. Most of the regimes use the Suez Canal. There's all kinds of shipping and trading that goes on between them. Workers, the dock workers in Egypt, have formed their own independent trade union. As they get their confidence, they can start to take the kind of action against the other ruling class figures and their regimes that will put them on the run, the same as Mubarak. There's all kinds of links between the finance industries, all kinds of things that workers would be able to find they could do that use their industrial might and their social power in a way that the street protests can't actually raise those questions. I want to make one last point before I finish, because The Arab revolutions have been compared to the Eastern European democratic revolutions of 1989 to 91. And, you know, there are some similarities, but I think the difference is the most significant thing about them, because in 1989 to 91, the revolutions were against the Stalinist states that called themselves communist. And this meant that there were illusions throughout those revolutions in the West and the Western capitalism and the market. And of course the West came out of it all triumphant. Capitalism's the one, you know, don't ever talk about trying to change the world for the better ever again. Capitalism's as good as it gets. Well, actually, I think we have to say the Arab revolutions are now a rebellion that is clearly and can't be painted in any other way as against the effects of 2 to 3 decades of neoliberal free-market capitalism. And to be honest, that's why they can feel the kind of echo in the hearts and minds of workers around the world that people talked about last night. That when workers are in protests and strikes in Wisconsin, the USA, they can see that we're all fighting against the effects of this neoliberal machine, because, you know, in the wealthiest of countries, workers are seeing cuts to their living standards, they're expected to pay for the crisis brought on by the neoliberal market, with policies that workers never wanted in the first place, and now we have to pay the price while they bail out all of the rich. And so it's not hard to see how people can identify with the revolutions in the Arab world. And so it doesn't seem like it's just, you know, oh, they're just getting capitalism like us, and God, we're all stuck with capitalism. Actually, we're all protesting against the capitalist market. And everywhere you go, like people, everything you see, people talk about occupying squares and giving their names to days. And it's obvious that as soon as people think of resisting, they think of what's happening in the Arab world. There was a protest in Italy, a union march a little while ago, and as people were marching, you could see this banner with just a huge word across it, kafaya, meaning enough. The word, the slogan of the democracy movement of Egypt going back to 2004. And they only had to carry that banner to make the connection, and we've heard of other connections people have made. But like all revolutionary movements, there's nothing like a revolution to actually expose the system for what it is there? That, you know, on the one hand, you get all the lies, the hypocrisy, the sheer inhumanity of capitalism. People know about this most of the time, but you don't talk about it, do you? Because it's the given, and we can't do anything about it. But now it comes to the fore, and the ruling class are exposed for what they are, and people can begin to feel a sense of hope. But also, the revolutions actually illustrate that fundamental divide that Marxism talks about all the time, which is that serious division that divides society throughout the globe of class. That on the one hand, we've got this tiny minority who, you know, live off the labour of everyone else, and they're prepared to defend their power and their control over the means of making wealth, they and all their own privileges. They are prepared to unleash any amount of misery. We've seen the starvation that exists all around the world when it's not necessary. The killing that is, you know, part and parcel of the system and justified by all kinds of horrible ideas. And then on the other hand, we see the vast majority that can identify with the revolutions. And I thought that this division was just like so eloquently expressed by this ABC Finance report the other day, and this ABC journalist, she didn't know she was being eloquent. Well, she might have thought she was, but she listed all the reasons why the stock markets are so jittery. China is slowing its growth. The US and the Europeans are all confronted by the debt and still financial problems. There's the earthquakes and the tsunami in Japan. And, of course, there's the terrible nuclear disaster. And wait for it, there's the unrest. Like, unrest sort of pretty much understates what's happening. But the unrest of the Arab world. And she actually said, including the unrest in the Arab world, there are so many dreadful things happening around the world. Dreadful things. And so there is nothing clearer than the way they talk about what is happening in the Arab Spring and how people on our side of the class divide can see it, to show that, you know, we live in a world where there can be no reconciliation between those people who, the parasites who live off everyone else. There can be no reconciliation. And the kind of fighting that we've seen in country after country will be necessary to overthrow those regimes. But the power that the working class has at the heart of the system gives us the power to actually be able to challenge the very rule of those rulers. And you can see from all of this why it is so easy for people to identify with each other, which I think was summed up by the placard that was used in both Egypt and Wisconsin that said, one world, one pain. Because, you know, I think now the Arab world has changed world politics. The world ruling class can't ignore it. Their whole, one of the key areas of their imperialist system is now becoming unstable. The ghost that just, you know, terrifies the ruling class of the imperialist West. And the mass of the population in those countries have begun the process, which might be a long and agonizing process. It will have its setbacks. It will have its victories. But nevertheless, I think we have to say we have taken the first steps in the Arab world for the rest of the world that begins the process of beginning to stand against those rulers, to stand face to face with them and begin the process of ending that pain for which they are so responsible.